Good evening and welcome to the discussion number one, the first discussion on wisdom from Sutra passages here at London Buddhist Vihara. Now, I have selected this passage, and as you see, the font size is way smaller than you are able to read. I think everyone can read it anyway, because I tried to print it in a bigger font, then it would be over one page. Yeah, so that's how. Now, I thought that it would be good to choose this passage from, repeating it for recording purpose, so that those who are going to listen to this discussion later on would be able to understand the passage itself. So this is based, discussion number one is based on Chula Malunkya Sutra. In English, the shorter instructions to Malunkya, the monk. And this sutra occurs in the Majjhima Nikaya. This is the sutra number 63 of the Majjhima Nikaya, or the Middle Length Sayings. There's another sutra called the Maha Malunkya, that is the longer instruction to Malunkya, the monk. But this is the shorter version. This is a different sutra. However, both sutras touch on pretty much the same questions. Why I selected this passage was that we are always, one of the area that we constantly question or remain confused in certain situations is that when it comes to metaphysical questions. Now, first of all, for recording purpose, even though it will take a few minutes, I would like to read out the whole passage, so as for anyone who listened to the recording would be able to understand, then it would be like an audiobook. So again, this passage is from sutra number 63 of the Majjhima Nikaya, Chula Malunkya Sutra, the shorter instructions to Malunkya the monk. Now, later on we will narrate the story, but at this time I'm only going to read out the passage, because when you look at the passage, it looks like there's no beginning, there's no end. That's because this excerpt I got from the middle of the sutra. So later I will narrate the story as well. These possessions that are undeclared, set aside, discarded by the Blessed One. The cosmos is eternal. The cosmos is not eternal. The cosmos is finite. The cosmos is infinite. The soul and the body are the same. The soul is one thing and the body another. After death, a Tathagata exists. After death, Tathagata does not exist. After death, the Tathagata both exists and does not exist. After death, Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist. I don't approve. I don't accept that the Blessed One has not declared them to me. I'll go ask the Blessed One about the matter. If he declares to me that the cosmos is eternal, that the cosmos is not eternal, that the cosmos is finite, that the cosmos is infinite, that the soul and the body are the same, that the soul is one thing and the body another, that after death the Tathagata exists, that after death the Tathagata does not exist, that after death the Tathagata both exists and does not exist, or that after death the Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist, then I will live the holy life under him. If he does not declare to me that the cosmos is eternal, or that the after death the Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist, then I will renounce the training and return to the lower life. It is just as if a man were wounded with an arrow thickly smeared with poison. His friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives would provide him with a surgeon, and the man would say, I won't have this arrow removed until I know whether the man who wounded me was a noble warrior or a Brahmin, a merchant, a worker. He would say, I won't have this arrow removed until I know the given name and clan name of the man who wounded me, until I know whether he was tall, medium, or short, until I know whether he was dark, ruddy brown, or golden colored, until I know his home village, town, or city, until I know whether the bow with which I was wounded was a long bow or a crossbow, until I know whether the bowstring was which I was wounded was fiber, bamboo threads, snew, hemp, or bark, until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was wild or cultivated, until I know whether the feathers of the shaft with which I was wounded were those of a vulture, a stork, a hawk, a peacock, or another bird, until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was bound with a snow or an ox or water buffalo or an unger or monkey. He would say, I wouldn't have this arrow removed until I know whether the shaft with which I was wounded was that of a common arrow, a curved arrow, a barbed, a calf tooth, or an olander arrow. The man would die and those things would still remain unknown to him. So, Malinkiputta, remember what is undeclared by me as undeclared, and what is declared by me as declared, and what is undeclared by me. The cosmos is eternal, is undeclared by me. The cosmos is not eternal, is undeclared by me. The cosmos is finite, the cosmos is infinite. The soul and the body are the same. The soul is one thing and the body another. After death, the Tathagata exists, and after death, the Tathagata does not exist. After death, the Tathagata both exists and does not exist. After death, the Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist, is undeclared by me. Now, these paragraphs, actually there are three paragraphs in this passage. So this passage contains three paragraphs, and I got these three paragraphs from all over the sutra. So even though this is called the shorter sutra, shorter version of the sutra, there's a longer one, even the shorter sutra itself is very long. Then I got the best translation here. Actually, there are several translations, but this translation is the most accurate, and this is layman's language. At the same time, it's a word-to-word translation as well. So I thought this is the best translation. Now, as you see, why I selected this passage is now based on two things. Now, the whole discussion is going to be based on Malunkya's metaphysical questions and the kind of answer that Buddha provided. All the questions that Malunkya asked was metaphysical, and Buddha always gave a pragmatic answer. Now, this sutra itself clearly explains that Buddha's teaching is not a philosophy, nor is it a religion, but it is a practical, it's a pragmatic way of life. That's the whole the point here. Now, so that is why personally this is one of my favorite sutras, and I want to. So we have had lots of discussions so far here at London Buddhist Vihara, and in groups and interpersonal, face to face, online. But always remember that. So we have discussed a lot of questions, and all those questions are encapsulated by this passage. So there are so many metaphysical questions here. But however, religion is about metaphysics, right? Religion is all about metaphysics. Sometimes a priest or a monk or a clergy member, however you call it, and he would always preach metaphysical things mostly. And in a way that religion is so much that Buddha says by himself, he says that people get infatuated by metaphysics. People always love to believe in something that they don't understand. They love to believe in something that they don't understand. In our day-to-day life also, right? So when we, as long as we don't experience something, we remain fascinated by that. Once we experience it, we become frustrated again. Why? Once things become known to us, we lose our fascination. So that is how religion can survive. Religion can very easily survive, no matter how technologically and scientifically advanced the society, the world is nowadays. religion can very easily survive, because the more metaphysical a religion is or a faith is, it survives more easily. That's how. However, Buddha was pragmatic. Now, here, Malunkya, given his lay life, he was a very intellectual. He had an inquisitive mind. Now, so that is why he had been to different teachers, and the more he learned something, then he got frustrated too. You know, by nature, there are different personality types. That some people only think about metaphysical things. They hate to think about daily life things. There are some people who hate metaphysics, and they always need something, regarding everything, they need some hands-on experience. There are different personality types. Now, according to one of the personality types, that is well explained in the Visuddhimagga, the path of purification, one day we will discuss that. Malunkya seems to be a mixture of buddhi, intellectual, and vitakka, always changing his position, type of personality. So the Malunkya became a monk because he was fascinated by the Buddha's teachings. One day when he was just enjoying a moment, he happened to think about these certain metaphysical questions. I think number wise there are 10 metaphysical questions. I get dasa, avyakata. You don't have, we are not going to use Pali words. Avyakata means undeclared. So there are usually 10, more or less. But however, you share the number here, and then what happens? So the Malunkya became a monk, and he was fascinated by the Buddha's teachings. Now, one day when he revisited the lessons that he had learned from the Buddha, he noticed that there were a lot of questions that Buddha never answered. Then he got puzzled by the Buddha's the fact that Buddha never answered those questions. Buddha never declared anything in his discussions. Now, so he made a whole list of questions that were bothering him, that would take away his peace of mind. So then he paid a visit to the Buddha. Now, so this sutta is based on a discussion, and Malunkya the monk, he was a monk. Malunkya had these questions. Now, as you see, once we take a look at those questions again, we don't have to go through everything. And by the way, then please interrupt me and ask me the question, because this is a discussion, right? This is a discussion. And also when you ask me questions, I can take a break too. So the cosmos is, see, it is always, these questions are, they are in philosophy, and especially in Buddhist sutras, you come across what is called the tetralemmas. Tetralemmas. In day-to-day life, we have dilemmas. Dilemmas. In philosophy, you come across tetralemmas. I mean, there are four ends, always. In metaphysics, tetralemmas. So usually, we can't even get our dilemmas resolved. How could we get our tetralemmas resolved? Now, all the metaphysics are based on the questions of tetralemma. So, as you know, four ends. So it is more confusing to see that. And let's look at one question here. So, for example, after death. Now, what happens was, Malunkya came to Buddha, paid his respect, and then he presented his questions to Buddha. And then he asked, and then he was very adamant. And he told the Buddha, these are the questions for which you have never declared any answers. So that these questions, you never did this. So that unless you give me an answer, unless you answer my questions, I will leave the robe and will go back to my lay life. But here the translation is that the last two words of the first paragraph, so the training and return to lower life. And that actually that's a direct translation of the Pali word. Lower means hina, meaning then you fall. So that's why lower life means lay life here. No offense to lay people. So, meaning in comparison with, compared with spiritual life. That's what a lower life means. So, I'm having these Pali words in my mind nowadays. So that's why this is Venerable Thanissaro Bhikkhu's translation. So, then I will renounce the training and return to the lower life. Meaning, I will go back to my lay life, unless you answer my question. Then Buddha was probably smiling. I can picture, even though I haven't seen the Buddha, probably there are a lot of humorous expressions that Buddha used in answering. And then Malunke, when you came to get ordained, did I tell you that I would answer these questions? No, sir, you never said that. So what then? What if I don't answer? Will you still go back to your lay life? And you will leave the robe and go back? So that is why I'm here. And then simply, so then finally Buddha said, what has been undeclared by me will remain undeclared. What has been declared by me will remain declared. So, and here is the reason. When I had a discussion on this sutra way back in 1998 in Singapore, now it took us 3 weeks to finish the discussion on this sutra, because there were question after question after question. And some people even cried, two people cried. Why? Please, Bhante, please don't say that those are metaphysical things. Please break it down to to the level of a lay person, because when I think about the unknown, that is where I am remain fascinated. Because those two students, they never want the answers. I said, you are not the first one. You know what? Even the Buddha's time, there were some followers, they left the Buddha. Why? Some people get fascinated by the thing that they don't understand. And in case someone comes over and explains to them what it is, and they get frustrated. So that is how religion is, actually. It lasted like almost three weeks, yeah. Now let's look at one question here. What's that? The Tathagata. By the way, when Buddha, you know, as an enlightened person, Buddha wouldn't speak in the first person. He wouldn't say I. So as an unenlightened person, me, due to my ego, I wouldn't, in my expressions, I wouldn't simply say I. At times, I. That denotes, that implies ego, right? I, not you. So Buddha would hardly use the word I in the first person. He would speak in the third person. Whenever, and there are a lot of synonyms for Buddha. There are different names that he used to introduce Buddha. Now Buddha, most of the time, he would use the word Tathagata. Now Tathagata has become an English word, I think. When I type it, it didn't get highlighted as wrong. Like karma nirvana, like the Tathagata. Now, Tathagata is a very important word. It's related. Whenever Buddha talks about, refers to himself, he would use the word Tathagata. Tathagata means Tatha. T-A-T-H-A. Tatha is the way the things are. Things as something as it is. In philosophical language, you call it suchness. I think we did talk about suchness in one of our previous sessions. Now, Tathagata, for example, this desk. I don't know whether this desk, let's call it a desk. Now, when somebody named it a desk, whoso did the first time. Now, because of that, we have conceptualized this piece of this wooden piece that has been given a certain shape, and so that it could be used for a specific purpose, a desk. Now, does this actually exist? Yes, it does. At the same time, it does not. On the conventional level, yes. Yeah, it is here because I feel it. In case you come over and say, no, Bhante, there's no such kind of desk, are you out of mind? You know, how could you say that? I feel, you know, this is my desk, I bought it. And at the same time, and then you explain to me, you know, that's on the conventional level. Now, on the absolute ultimate level, there is no desk here. It's all concept. It's a concept here. Now, tatha means that the reality that is beyond concepts. Now, most of the time, what we see as a reality is a concept always. We conceptualize things. Even nirvana we conceptualize. So that is why Buddha hasn't given, there's only few sutras where Buddha has explained nirvana. He never wanted to do that. Why? His purpose was to explain samsara, our existence. More than 99% of teachings are based on, were used to explain samsara or our existence. When we understand the existence, that very understanding is called tatha. Agata means one who has achieved that, one who has experienced suchness. He is the one who tathagata. However, there are some another translation of thus gone one. That is a word-to-word translation. Thus means tatha, this, like this. Gata means gone. And some books say thus gone one. And it doesn't make any sense actually. Tathagata, tatha, one who has experienced the fact that things don't have a permanent or fixed essence. Everything has an attributed essence. Everything has an attributed essence. And that understanding is called tatha. One who has experienced that and known that by experience is called tathagata. And it seems like Buddha wouldn't have a favorite word, because when you say my favorite means that is attachment. However, probably for the purpose of passing a message to his listeners, audience, and whenever Buddha refers to himself, he used the word tathagata. So that's the word tathagata. Any questions? Before we continue with the tetralemmas here, let's do the first one. Does, what is that? After death, a tathagata exists. Tathagata does not exist. Tathagata both exists and does not exist. Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist. See how confusing it is, right? That's called the tetralemmas. Four questionable ends. Yes?
What is that you are saying, that tetralemma?
Tetralemma. I have to be mindful of my spelling too, because we all use these words in our... T-E-T-R-A-L-E-M-A. I think tetra means four, right? Yeah. Lemma means end something. Dilemma. Die, D, two, right? Yeah, tetralemma. Yeah. A factor or a question, a thing with four ends. Four questionable, four puzzling ends something. So that's what tetralemma is. Now, see, when it comes to, it's a metaphysical question. Now, why malum ke vos? Now, here, there's a message, another message from here. Now, that doesn't mean that the Buddha was unable to answer these questions. Now, it wouldn't serve a purpose. For example, one question is, recently when in intellectual dialogue, there are other sutras that Buddha continued to discuss these things. Now, Buddha was always, he came to the world in human body. He wouldn't stay that long in the world. He should teach more people, show the path. Now, let's say, an intellectual professor goes to talk to a kindergarten children. Now, if we use the highly intellectual language to talk to the children, now the children wouldn't understand him. Instead, he comes down to the level of the children and explains something that would make sense. And based on that, children get motivated and they get elevated knowledge-wise, wisdom-wise. And afterwards, and then that would give them some grounding to further question. Buddha has never prohibited. He has never asked people to not to think about these questions. And then always, Buddha uses what is called a plural approach. There's no universal approach. Plural approach means based on individuals. Now, if it were a different person, and he would have given a different answer. But in general, Buddha's approach was such that he would try his best to put his audience, put whosoever comes to him for learning on the path of pragmatism. You're going to ask something? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Now, actually, you can ask questions. Yeah. We can discussion. Yeah, discuss.
There's all, I've come across this before, and it seems to be the obvious question that down here, when he's talking about the Tathagata existing and non-existing,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like he's, on the surface level, it appears that he's not wanting to declare an answer to rebirth. Mm-hmm. It then seems to contradict the concept of wrong view, because in wrong view, not mm-hmm. believing in rebirth mm-hmm. is wrong view. But it's almost like he's saying he doesn't know whether rebirth occurs.
Yeah, actually, that's a good question, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, this is, there are two types of teachings, conventional teachings and absolute teachings. And this sutra belongs to the level, ultimate level sutra. That's been, it's a fascinating question. Because you could see that when you take certain sutras and Buddha says, karma follows you, and karma will trigger your next birth. And elsewhere he says, there's no doer of karma. How could there be karma then? So that how could there be existence? Because there are no individuals. Now that is the Tathā type of answers. So that's when he, and in, there's another call, in Anguttara Nikāya he says, there are two levels of teaching, he says. We will discuss that passage one day. And in that passage he says, the easiest and the most brutal way of misinterpreting the Buddha is to say that a teaching given ultimate level, somebody misunderstand an ultimate level sutra as a conventional level sutra, and the conventional level sutra as an ultimate level sutra. So there are two levels of sutras, teachings. So actually it is always confused. When I was like 18, 19, all high school students also, I got confused also. And even wrote a paper, then I gave it to my teacher, and then that's when he told me, it's quite normal, that's because there are two types of teachings then. So there are two levels of teachings. One is called conventional. If I translate the Pali words in my head, so nītatta, teachings that cannot be interpreted any further. Teachings that requires further interpretations. Those are the two levels of. So the sutra that cannot be interpreted any further are the kinds of these tathā and then nirvana and all this. Whereas this one exists in the middle. Now, as you said, it can confuse anyone very easily, because the way the thing is. In general, we are more aligned with the conventional teachings, based on our conventional understanding. Because most of the time we hear the sutra that says there's karma, and karma can affect us. And it is karma that triggers our next birth. And so we run into samsara because of the karma that we make. If you can stop karma, and so that we can completely stop karma, so that we that would be the end of our samsara, and that's what we in general say. So if that's the confusion, and it is justified. So that is when Buddha encourages for our discussions. That is when he purposely would call a plural approach. Each factor that we discuss on its own merit. There's no general approach call. So that's where the difference is. The Pali word is pariyaya, plural. Pariyaya, plural. Now, if it were Satchaka, the logician, you know, there are so many long intellectual sutras Buddha has given to logicians like Satchaka. Satchaka was a well-known logician. At times, Buddha stopped answering. Why? Buddha didn't have anything to say. Another word he said, and it would have given Satchaka a wrong message. And then Buddha remained silent. And then Satchaka asked, why you are silent now? At times it is... Anyway, Satchaka thought that Buddha was speechless. He didn't have any answer. And when Satchaka was gone, Ananda or anyone would approach him and ask, why you were silent? And he assumed that you don't know the answers. And Buddha simply said, well, if Tathagata said one more word, and it would trigger another round of debate, arguments. So that's the way it is. There's no any further because it's ineffable. Actually, that's the word, ineffable. Certain realities cannot be expressed by means of language. So he would remain silent. And the whole purpose is then Buddha would ask to motivate people to practice actually. Meditate on your kilesas or your defilements. And when you are able to get rid of certain negativities, toxic feeling, then you will see how peaceful you would feel within, biologically and psychologically. And based on that, you would feel like trying one more thing, another higher level of practice. So this is called gradually increasing levels of practice. So that's the way. And then Buddha in order to discourage people to stick to metaphysical questions and also to motivate people to practice. And he purposely discouraged certain things, questions, undeclared. Mm-hmm. So that was a must-ask question. Mm-hmm. Because I am the one who asked those questions when I was 18-year-old. From my teacher, my Buddhist philosophy teacher. Mm. Sometimes one day he told that he would take a break because one day he came to class and when I say, one day I wasn't there, I was absent due to illness, and he said, "Okay, I might have a sigh of release. Otherwise, that guy, if he were here, and he wouldn't take the and he wouldn't ask the same question like that." Because actually, I still read these sutras and I ask myself, how to convince myself then. But think, when I meditate and when I find answers to certain questions, then I'm able, those questions start getting evaporated by my own, get kind of dissolved by my own understanding. So.
Got another question.
Hmm?
He said it's an accurate translation.
Uh-huh.
And here, one of the questions is about the soul and the body. Not the mind and the body or consciousness, but the soul. And understanding, I thought it's Hindus who believe in the soul, not Buddhists. And
that's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Is there any significance to this?
Soul? Yeah, the soul, the Atman. That's the word, the original sutra is Atman. Atta, A-T-T-A, Atta. Or the Sanskrit word is Atman, which is like English now. Now, because he was a Brahmin, now he was born, you know, there were no Buddhists, everyone was born Hindu or Brahminical, like the Buddha, Siddhartha himself. So actually that is, thank you for noting that. Yeah, the soul and the body are the same. Now, for that, Buddha has given a clear answer. Now, elsewhere, let's say, if you add the Buddha, are the body and the soul same, and then instead of before answering the question, Buddha would clarify what soul means. Now, in Sanskrit we call Atman, in Pali, Atman, A-T-A-T-M-A-N, Atman, and in Pali is Atta, that is A-T-T-A, Atta. It also means self. And Buddha used the word Atma, Atta Bhava. We did discuss in our previous Bhava, B-H-A-V-A, Bhava. Bhava means constantly being, going through change. So he used the word Atta Bhava, not Atta. Not Atma, but Atma Bhava. And then Buddha says, if I, a layman's translation is, a loose translation of Atta Bhava is, soul that constantly goes through change, as opposed to a fixed permanent entity. So that, and so if Buddha was asked a question about the difference is the soul and the body, are the soul and the body same? Before he would answer, he would first explain, he would ask a counter question. What do you mean by soul? What do you mean by soul? And you would, and then there was a question, well, soul means this to me. And in case the Brahmin said to the Buddha, well, soul is something eternal. No, there's no such thing called a permanent entity called soul, Atta. Then what do you say? But you use the word Atta. Yeah, I don't use the word Atta, I use Atta Bhava. So what is the difference between Atta Bhava and Atta then, he would ask. Well, Bhava means going through, constantly getting modified by new layers of karma, habits and memories that you put on that. So it goes through change. Okay, then there can be a question then again, if say, okay, what about the body and soul as you explain Buddha, same. Then Buddha would explain the difference then. So that's why Buddha, it took me a lot of time to how to get the question verified again. Because otherwise, if he answered right away, he would have given a wrong answer. Because in answering, first I need to know the way what you mean by your question. So that is why these sutras, especially in the Digha Nikaya, long length teachings, the sutras have become, they are called Digha Nikaya, the long length saying, they became longer because of those questioning and counter question and verification and re-verifications of a sort. So that's the reason, yeah. Mm-hmm.
To me, it just sounds, when you describe it like that, it sort of reminds me of, the legal way of looking at things is you always define the terms specifically at the beginning of a contract.
Yeah.
And you don't go further into the contract until everybody's clear. This is what this means.
Exactly.
It just clarifies everything.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I couldn't do the comments of both you both. Now, now, Buddha was born into a Brahminical, and he, nowadays we call Hindu. Anyway, there's no Hinduism then. However, we can call, for the convenience, we could call it Hinduism that back then too. Now, he was born into what is called theistic society. That's called theistic society, or called the theocentric society, as opposed to an anthropocentric, meaning God-centered society. Not man-centered, not humanistic, but theistic. Now, in theistic societies, in theistic perceptions, you don't question certain things. There's no way, actually, in certain cases, you are not supposed to question, or even if you question, and then always your question may go unanswered. And then, so the Malunke was highly, he was a very highly intellectual young man. So now he has a big problem with the cosmos. And given these questions, right, they all represent his theistic perception. So the cosmos that relates to the creator, soul, body are the same. So, yes.
I'm just confused here. Why it is not included mind? We always say mind, body and soul.
Yeah, it's based on the questions that Malunke asked. Because Malunke never asked about any question regarding the mind. Yeah, so all the question, exactly, as well. So then, but when elsewhere, when you study other sutras, and Buddha has explained the difference between Atta, Atman, and Atta Bhava, Atma Bhava, soul as a permanent entity, and Buddha, now it is not as a permanent entity, but it is something that that goes through constant change. Another sutra. So that's why actually today I selected this one. This is as a prelude to our future discussions. Now the passage that we're going to select in the future would more or less correspond to this one. So that's why, because I wanted a thought provoking passage. Otherwise, I know this is dry philosophical passage, actually. Now the thing is, the message is Buddha wanted to tell Malunke that his idea was to help people understand dukkha, actually. That is the purpose. See, I came across, one day I came across one man in Cambridge area. He was from Sri Lanka, actually. So he masters all the religions in the world. You name it, he knows it. And he's perfect. I think when you put 100 professors together, intellectual ones, and then they wouldn't be able to, and then he would still outsmart every one of them. However, his children left him, his wife left him. And then, so that he went to jail twice. So nobody would hire him. And his CV was flagged. But the thing is, whenever he gets into problem, he gets into trouble with people, argue and things. So that when I came to know, and then one of his British friends, introduced him to me, and he came for a discussion. However, his friend had advised him, now, go to Banthe and listen to him, what he says. And later on you will speak up. When I started speaking, he interrupted at the second minute, then okay, I asked him to talk. He kept talking like 40 minutes. Yeah, 40 minutes. And then, so there's no way to, then I thought about Malunke. But again, and later, according to the sutra, Malunke gave up his idea of his inquisitive mind, and he went into meditation, and he understood his mentality and his dukkha, and he became an arahat. Later, in somewhere else, and Malunke became an arahat. There were other monks, later on they would go to Malunke and ask a certain question. Some monks would tease him. Malunke, do you think that the soul and the body, soul and body do exist, or they do not exist, they neither exist nor does not exist, etc. And Malunke simply smiled and walked away. So the purpose is actually, but here, there's no way we should misunderstand that Buddha has discouraged us. He discouraged Malunke himself. Because all his teachings are interpersonal. Most teachings are interpersonal. So that is why when we interpret his teachings, most of the time we need to remove the cultural milieu, the cultural background. So most sutras also give us a message, the nature of the Buddha's answers based on the cultural or the intellectual background, the very person who asked those questions. So when we remove those backgrounds, and we can come up with some universal questions. Now forget about Malunkia. When you see these questions, actually, these questions are constantly asked. These questions are the very subject of debates, intellectual arguments, intellectual discussions, seminars, workshops, everything in any religion. Whenever you ask some philosophical questions, that question more or less connect to at least one of these questions. So that's why these questions are valid. These questions are valid. But Buddha wanted to give Malunkya a different message. Because Malunkya had already wasted time on his, thinking about these questions. Because he neglected his meditation, his spiritual practice. So that is the purpose. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the way I mean this is that as all sentient beings, we have like desires, like always find happiness and have this freedom from suffering. We can't escape this.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's completely inescapable. So maybe his intention is he's asking all these questions because that's what gives him happiness.
That's right. Exactly.
Like sometimes we might want to learn about space and it's wonderful. Not knocking anyone who's an astronomer out there. Mm-hmm. Astronomy.
Right.
You learn that, or you learn a particular type of science because it makes you happy.
Happy, yes.
I guess Buddha's looking at it going, none of this is actually going to save you from samsara. Like these
no, that's right, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
You need to
Exactly. Inquisitive, being inquisitive about these questions, actually, it is therapeutic. But however, in the long run, it wouldn't bring us any solace because it is temporary. See, there's some scientists, and then I know some scientists at NASA, and then I know two of them. They are on prescription. They are depressed. Then when they came for meditation, and then one was interested in stars and Mars and Venus, but first I let him because I let them talk. And after three sessions, they were tired, and they walked. They walked away. Say, "We will come. We are tired. We will come, some other time for meditation." They came and three times, and they left. And that helped me understand the way where they were. And the next time they entered, I had the meditation gong ready, cushions ready. I asked them to sit. I did deep breath for 5 minutes with them, and they're more relaxed. And afterward, then I did stand in meditation another 5 minutes. Then we went back to sitting. Then we did walking. No verbal, I simply announced the next step only. No prior introduction or anything, because otherwise, had I said something, and it would have triggered them for another intellectual debate with me. So I was being very tactful. It's okay to say I was tricky, actually. I had to be very astute. Otherwise, and later on, the 3 days later, they came again. One day when I saw them cleaning the shrine hall, so that one scientist had brought his son, who was a young man, like a 19-year-old, and then he looks happy too. Because he went home and told his son, because his son had a problem with Pluto. Dad, why did you remove Pluto from the staff? From the planetary staff, his language, staff, like the solar system. Well, we just decided that why? Don't ask those funny questions. You know what? Why? Okay, let's go to the temple. And that's how brought him to the temple. Now, it's been like 4 years since this happened. Now, what happens is now they come to meditation and they travel and the scientists, they give talks too. But actually, I listened to two talks that they gave in Houston area, one in Dallas, So they say that, so it is therapeutic. It's a therapy for me to talk about my expertise. However, now I understood recently that I had failed to talk to my wife, talk to my children. Then I neglected my family life. I went on a picnic. So during the picnic also we would more or less talk about this science as well. But I was not, I was not crazy about the space and those planets and things. So that Buddha himself has talked about cosmology. And he's talked about the suns and other planets, different types of planets, different types of lokas. Loka means worlds. Physical worlds, astral worlds, dimensions that is not a planet, but a world. There are planetary lokas, planetary worlds and non-planetary worlds. And solar system, 100,000 world system, 10,000 world system, 100,000 and like that. And galaxies, different things. But if Buddha talked about those metaphysical things also, that was for a reason to give people an understanding that you could continue to talk about those cosmological things, but they wouldn't serve a purpose in your day-to-day life. Because Buddha has a different purpose, actually. Now Albert Einstein and Buddha. Now, Buddha's come to the world to talk about the inner universe, the mind, the micro-universe. Albert Einstein was here to talk about the macro, the physical universe. And Buddha was here to now mental universe. That's where the dukkha is. So that based on the purpose, actually, it depends on in your case you have expertise in different you are specialized in different areas. We all go to a primary school. We take turns to talk to the children. And then, so our presentations that we make for those children, right, on a piece of paper, you just spoke spontaneously, impromptu. And so later on, you have a dialogue after, and then you share your knowledge. Definitely would have talked about pretty much of the same thing on the same level. Why? Your audiences were children. And there were some intellectual dialogues between Buddha and other arahats too. And some ordinary monks didn't understand why it was a different level. Probably here, there was a big gap between Buddha and Malunke in terms of understanding. If it was Sariputta, one of the enlightened monks, it would have been a different one. Actually, Sariputta wouldn't even ask any questions about this. That's the point here. And the parable, I think we don't have to go through. This is called the parable of the poisoned arrow, right? How stubborn, and this is called spiritual. This is called the stubbornness. This one is he was so stubborn, and he could have died very easily, because of the poison arrow. See how many people. How many questions did he ask about the shooter who shot the arrow, the nature of the arrow, what kind of metal, iron use it, and who shot it, big build, small build, medium build, his caste, which kind of background, from where he shot it, and then he talked about each and every part of the arrow, everything. So, and then what sort of man he did. So at that point, what it was. However, later, the man understood the immediate remedy. Now, the parable says is when it comes to our lot of questions, just that's another underlying message here. Actually, there's more, even more important than the metaphysical questions. In problem solving, we need to take a practical or pragmatic approach. It's like now, you come to me. Let's say you lost your job, and then you are going through a lot of emotional disturbances, and then you come to me and ask for help me get a job. Then I will give you a talk how our primal ancestors were hunter-gatherers. That was the first kind of employment, how they make a living. And also I give an anthropological narrative of how our ancestors, our primal ancestors, and everyone had the idea of make livelihood and all these things. And I explained tech-oriented jobs and teaching and all those things. Then I kept talking, keep talking to you like a whole month, right? It doesn't take a whole month. When I, let's say, if I speak like maybe 40 minutes then, and definitely you will walk away, cursing me, because you came to the wrong person for a solution, right? That's no solution. So sometimes when some people came to Buddha, and then given the time also, sometimes Buddha's refused to answer the questions. He took some. He would buy time. In the case of Dharuchirya, the sea merchant who got shipwrecked and he lost everything, and he narrowly escaped his life, and he was washed off to an island, and finally he and somebody told the Buddha was living in that area that day, and he rushed to see the Buddha, and Buddha was going on alms round. It's close to his lunchtime, and he went to see Buddha, and he asked, please teach me. I was looking for somebody, said, you are here, please teach me. And Buddha, this is not the time, friend, to learn. And he asked a second time, no, please, you must teach me now, second time. And he refused, and third time also, and he refused. Finally, and then Buddha noticed he wanted Dharuchira to slow down. That for the purpose, Buddha did have time. So then he made time, he stopped, and so that now Dharuchiri was not frustrated, he was too motivated. When you're too motivated, you don't learn anything. Because you get fascinated. So, and then Buddha let Dharuchiri slow down, and then Buddha taught him. And then he became an arahat, and he got enlightened right away. But hadn't Buddha taken some time, maybe a few minutes, and Buddha still taught him, and Dharuchiri wouldn't get it. So it's timing, mentality, and all these things. So there are different techniques that Buddha has. Any question? Yeah. Yes.
I just wondered if it would be helpful to imagine what Mariyanka's motivations were behind
these questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By nature, he was an intellectual young man. Actually, that is one of the reasons why he became... he had... Those questions were troubling him for a long time. That is why he turned to Buddha to find answers. Because he saw that there were other intellectuals who had become monks and they were living a silent life. And then Malunke thought that, okay, they found their answers, why not me? Why not me? That was his basic motivation. So that is why he became monk. But when he became monk, then Buddha, probably he attended many teachings that Buddha gave, and then Buddha never touched on his questions. Probably that is when Malunke became frustrated. That's when he thought to himself, and today I'm going to him, and ask him these questions. Unless he answers my questions, I will disrobe. So that is why his mind was at the peak of frustration. He was highly intelligent. He was right actually, but given his nature, because he needed answers. It could be you. If I were in his situation, I would do the same thing. I would do the same thing, because it depends. Nobody can, let's say, now, if you are highly intellectual, I'm not supposed to offend your intellectual ability. Honestly, I respect and I must be able to answer your questions because that is your ability. Now, so Malunke had the same ability. However, Buddha wanted him Buddha saw that Malunke was able to achieve his enlightenment. But had Malunke continued to bother himself about those questions, and his becoming a monk would be meaningless. So that is why Buddha wanted to motivate him a different way. That was the purpose.
Is it similar? Because mm-hmm. it makes me think of it's like some of these, when you talked earlier about this is how religions kind of exist,
mm-hmm.
and philosophies on kind of metaphysical. Some people give answers, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do.
And it means that people who devote themselves to those religions,
mm-hmm.
they feel like they can endure their suffering
mm-hmm.
because of a bigger metaphysical.
That's right.
Answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in that, there's no cessation to their suffering. They
no,
just endure.
No, exactly.
And so is that what the Buddha's trying to say? The answers to these questions won't stop the suffering.
No, they wouldn't stop suffering, but they would simply take away your valuable time.
Yeah.
That's...
Do you know what that reminds me of?
Mm-hmm.
You know when people create products to sell on Amazon?
Mm-hmm.
The way they do that is they go on Google and there's a research tool on Google.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go in there and you see what millions of people are searching for on Google, like, how do I stop my dog from barking at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Right, right.
And then you find out what all these people are searching for.
Mm-hmm.
And you just create a product that fulfills that
mm-hmm.
need and you
mm-hmm.
sell that product. And then once you've sold that product, then they'll have another issue.
Yeah.
So then you sell them another product.
Yeah.
And another product, and another product. So you get them onto your mailing list with the first product that you're selling,
yeah.
and then they're hooked, and they just keep coming back and buying more and more products. Are they real
products?
They're real products, yeah. That's
they're real
products. They actually create products
like
Amazon and stuff like that. And it's just when religions are literally products for the mind.
That's right.
Is that because we make a problem out of our own existence?
We see
our own existence as something to be
right,
solved.
Yeah. See, even to this, I have been a monk for many years now. In my free time, I would close my eyes and think about something metaphysical. Okay, how far is it, I came across in sutras, there are other heavens outside of this galaxy. And if they were, if they disappeared from their galaxies, and then they appear here to listen to the Buddha, and then how long it will take them to arrive here. See? I still think about those things. And Buddha did explain those things too. Especially when the Pali commentaries also, especially when you look at the commentary or the sub-commentary to the Buddha's first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutra. And then divine beings who were in this galaxy, they could disappear from their heavens and they could appear before the Buddha. And then some divine beings, they appeared. When they appeared before the Buddha, Buddha has almost done with his teaching. But they thought that they came to Buddha real quick. Actually, they lived so far away in another galaxy, another universe, it took them like forever to get there. So doesn't that, you know, then when I read the commentary, then I forgot, okay, I know this, you know, my meditation and my sufferings and dukkha and everything, why not study this one and think about this? So Buddha hasn't rejected metaphysical things, because the word metaphysics is not a negative term, actually, it's a positive thing. Now, what matters is, someone going through some dukkha or suffering in day-to-day life, and then if they start exploring the Mars or the Venus, or maybe the Pluto, and then his exploration wouldn't bring him any answers or the solution. That is the whole purpose, actually. Otherwise, Buddha hasn't rejected these things. And Buddha has in fact talked about these metaphysical things in other sutras. There are a lot of sutras. Planets and stars and Vangis also. Vangis Sutra, one day we'll talk about him too. And Buddha accepted, and Buddha said that when with his psychic powers he used to travel between planets and different planets in the galaxy. And Buddha accepted that, approved that. And Buddha, yes. And I said, yes, I see that, you did that. He came to Buddha seeking answers for his question. He had a burning questions. And then one day we will talk about that. So that is when Buddha wouldn't reject the metaphysical things. But when it comes to ending our dukkha, she said, our sufferings, metaphysical questions can hardly help us. That's the point here, actually. Otherwise...
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please, yeah.
Is it similar to when he addressed the monks, asking them, which is more, a handful of leaves I'm holding,
exactly,
or the entire forest behind me?
Exactly,
and
yeah.
They answered him, well, there's more leaves in the forest behind you.
Behind, yeah, yeah.
He said, I'm only presenting you
the handful,
the
yeah,
handful of
exactly,
leaves, which leads to the end of suffering.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah,
not all the knowledge
that
is available in the world.
In the world, yeah, that's
because
true, yeah.
It doesn't end suffering. All of this other knowledge,
perfect,
endless forest.
Perfect answer. Yes, yeah, that's what the Buddha has answered. Yeah, forest. Yeah, but still there could be someone asking the Buddha, actually thinking that Buddha would. How many leaves, Buddha, how many leaves are there in the world, something, right? People could, let's say I was there, and everyone else accepted Buddha's answer, but I could ask him, Buddha could still explain more. Another thing is, Buddha would only explain things that would help you end your sufferings. If a certain insight that he know that wouldn't help you, then he wouldn't say that. He wouldn't share that. There's no point then. And it says that even according to Buddha Vamsa, that's the chronicle of some Buddhas. Buddha's life is very short in human body, and they wouldn't. They would act quickly to teach before their time is over, before their death. So that's what Buddha Vamsa says. He had never rejected. Now, how to say, not answering the metaphysical questions doesn't mean that those metaphysical things don't exist. So now, when regarding the Tathagata, the Tetralemma of Tathagata's Buddha's existence, now according to Ratana Sutta, once Buddha was asked what happens to someone when an enlightened person passes, what will happen to his consciousness or soul, Atman, whatever. And Buddha would simply explain that when you blow a candle flame, where is it going? Where is it gone? And the person who had the question was silent. So was the Buddha then. There was no more question, there was no more answering. So the energy got dissolved. But however, why Buddha said that answer was, we always, in our imagination, in our actual thinking, we do want to exist in some form. The person who is most frustrated with his life or existence would tend to find a place for himself where he can exist. So we cannot think about our being without existence. We do want to exist somewhere. So that's why some people got frustrated by the Buddha's teaching on Nirvana. Some had imagined being in a place forever, so that there were no more suffering, no more illness, no more problems, no more bad company. No need to have good company anyway. Again, the good company would bring you suffering again when you break up. So people would think about such a place. So, but nothing wrong with that thinking. That's the way we are, right? That's the way we are. So, now, when a four-wheel vehicle, now when you park it, it doesn't move because it can stand, fight the gravity. Whereas you can't set a bike, a two-wheel, like a foot bike, like that. It falls. So that's how mindset is. Yes, Sharita?
I have two questions, and it's a basic one.
Uh-huh.
So I just want a simple explanation.
Okay.
What is the soul? And another is, what is cosmos?
Now, soul is, if I answer in short, soul is a certain energy within us that can exist in different bodies. It doesn't die out with our death, and it leaves the body and it enters another biology, and so it continues to exist. Now that is what soul is. Yeah, kind of spirit too, yeah. Mm. How to, in theistic religions, you call so that the mind, body and spirit, right? So the spirit is soul. So it's based on that, you know, in certain cultures, in certain religious beliefs, when you say, okay, my uncle passed away, now his spirit is around. Some say his ghost is around. But the term ghost is scary, more scary than spirit. Now the spirit at that moment, they don't have that my uncle's spirit is around, mean that he doesn't have a body. But according to Buddhism, the Buddha's teachings, but still to be around, so the departed parties, the one's consciousness must have some kind of body, that's called mind-made body, mental body. It's a full being. So that's spirit. And again, cosmos, in Buddhism, cosmos is explained in terms of akasa or space. Space. Space has no limits. No limits. If you want to see the limit of a space, let's say you go to open air, and then you demarcate, and so you put the lines, you draw some lines, and for example, we are in the space. However, this is a space that we can see. Why? There are four walls. The Buddhist answer to cosmos is simply space. It has no limits. No limits. Actually, the scientists like that answer. Now, scientists sometimes think about, okay, the size of our universe. And Buddha wouldn't even think about that. Why? And there's no size of the universe. We cannot talk about size. Why it's space? Now, some people say universe and other universes, some people say. When you say our universe and other universes, and it implies that you know the limits, the boundaries of your universe. So in Buddhism, we don't come across such definitions. So it's simply a space. Yeah, space, yeah.
But is there any difference between universe and galaxies?
Galaxies are, it's a physical area. I mean, how to say, it would include planets, stars. So that's a galaxy. And in Buddhism, we come up that word again. See how fascinating to talk about the cosmos, yeah. Right? See again, and Buddha just talk about the cosmos. That's called Pali word is chakka word. Chakka. C-A-K-K-A, chakka. Chakka means circular. Our water is whole, like black holes. Circular holes. On the surface, it's circular, but it's a big hole, you go into that. It is infinite. Nobody knows the size. And within that, there's one, that is called one galaxy within that place. Chakravarti. See, we talk about black holes somebody. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Now, coming back to the soul thing.
Similarly, on the soul, and even in these questions, it seems inseparable from a persistent sense of self.
Buddha used the word paticca-samuppanna. In different discussions when Buddha was asked, some people tried to get Buddha say Buddha did believe in soul. And Buddha knew that. And finally Buddha would say, okay, if the Tathagata believes in a soul, that would be paticca-samuppanna soul. Constantly changing soul. Paticca-samuppanna means interdependent, based on, he explained soul, based on his teaching dependent origination, or the interdependent origination. Because it goes through change, interdependent. Soul is the idea dependent upon new data, karma, habits and memories that you add. So as a result, it gets modified. So, and in order to explain that, Buddha explained atta, atman, soul, as a liquid, not as a fixed entity. It's something, it's like in liquid form. That's called bhava, means always coming into being. Bhava, to be. In fact, the Sanskrit root to be comes from bhava. In Sanskrit, bhu. B-H-U, bhu, to be. Always becomes. So, atta bhava means always becoming soul. Becoming something. Something means it's other than the way it existed the previous moment. Now it's different now. So when I walk into, if I still use the theistic word of soul, when I, to explain my consciousness, the part of my consciousness that goes to go for another birth after my death, now it has changed a bit. Why? I added, when I listen to you, I got more ideas and I put them on my, so I create some memories, then I send them down to my inner consciousness. So as a result, now it's changed. It has changed. Because it has changed, when I walk away from this room, I would be a different person.
So other people of his time would have their definition of soul, their understanding.
Exactly, soul meaning.
He's talking about his understanding of these five aggregates and explaining it in his own way. People can put
Word
Atman on that if they want, but in reality, he's just explaining these aggregates that are always changing.
Always changing. In order to do that, he used the language of deconstruction. Deconstructive language. Not the constructive language, because we are constructive people, we are conceptualized. No, in order to think about things by deconceptualizing them, instead of thinking about an individuality, persona, he simply explained them by five aggregates. He broke it down to five areas. Always, his definition of mind, the analysis of mind also in Abhidharma. Now, there are 52 basic tendencies rather than one single mind. So, different areas. So, that's deconstructive language. So, that is why some people find it difficult to understand Abhidharma. In Abhidharma, you don't talk about individuals or people. You think to talk about conditions. Conditions of the physical world and conditions of the mental world, like the five aggregates. Because otherwise, once you conceptualize yourself, whatever we conceptualize ourselves the way we want us to be, whether or not we are is true. They say, when I say, okay, I have the best knowledge in the world. Nobody is supposed to count my knowledge. Now, what is that? That's the way I conceptualize myself. And when you come to me and you challenge, or when you say that, when you defeat, and when you try to convince, even though I understand that I am wrong at that point and you are correct, you are right, then I wouldn't accept that. Why? My ego. At that point, if I understand, okay, the way I have imagined myself, conceptualized myself is wrong then. So I should give up on that. So I have reinforced myself then. Unless I do that, I would remain the same egoistic person. So that I would suffer due to my own self-conceptualization. So.
Can I ask a quick question about the cosmos? Because...
Mm-hmm.
In this context, I know it's context dependent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the Buddha is saying that don't ask me if the cosmos is final or infinite, it's useless, you know, it's irrelevant. However, if you say, can we say that the cosmos is a synonym of the universe? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, it's a synonym. It's a synonym, yeah.
Okay, because in that case, doesn't the Buddha define a long time of the kalpa and epoch in terms of the expansion and contraction of one universe?
That's great, because he would always explain universe or cosmos in terms of time and space. Because space is cosmos itself, time is about expansion. But again, when it comes to expansion and, what the other word?
Contraction.
Yeah, contraction. Most of the time Buddha talks about not the empty space itself, but because the existence of the validity, the existence of the space or the cosmos is validated by the physical objects that exist within it, like planets and stars. For example, like this space is valid because of the objects in here. Nobody is able, let's say, now there's nothing here. Then I get attention. Then I say, do you see the space here? No, we don't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Can you see the space? I'm pointing.
Mm.
You can't see that. Yeah, so, space is beautiful.
Yeah.
How could, do you see anything? They would ask. When you say, do you see anything? Meaning you already have conceptualized right away. So that is how Buddha explains okasa. Kala, okasa. Kala is timing. Okasa is space. However, layman's translation of okasa is sky. But actually, okasa is not sky, space. Okasa, space. Now, Buddha talks about contraction and expansion now in terms of anicca, actually, to explain anicca. Or impermanence.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about kalpas. But again, the Buddha's understanding of time and space is very different than the way it is understood by scientists. Even though scientists say that time travel, you can go back to your time, and Buddhism never says that. There's no way to go back to your time. Why? It is simply a concept. You cannot go back. But the only thing is, you can go back in the memories. And Buddha says, if you have pubbenivasanusajana, if you read, you can recall your own past lives. There you can go back. But not the time itself. But still, you are currently, your memories are current. Even though they were made in the past somewhere, maybe many kalpas or eons ago, you created those memories. The only thing you are doing is, you are bringing them back to, you are reactivating them and seeing those memories. So there's one from professor in Sri Lankan NASA scientist. We always talk about this time and space, time travel. So there's no way we can go. What happens is, you know, Buddha talks about the four great elements. You know, apo, mobility, tejo, heat. Vayo, sorry, apo, liquidity, tejo, heat, vayo, mobility, and patavi, earth. And then, however, in Hindu philosophy, they had the fifth one, they call pancha mahabhut, akasa. Akasa. And Buddha basically used four elements. But Hinduism, you come up four things, akasa. Why is that? They included it. The concept of the akasa existed before the Buddha, and Buddha removed akasa, space, and he simply explained the four great elements only. Then again, even some Buddhists would add akasa back to the list. Why? Once you add akasa, or the okasa, akasa, the space, and then again they go back to the creation, creator. So that's how Buddha removed that. Yeah, so it's comforting to people.
No, but I don't follow the logic of just because you include space in the elements.
Okay, give me 1 second. So thank you very much for attending today's discussion. We will see next Thursday.